The first thing I'll say is that, you know, their concerns are valid, you know, their worries are valid, right? And that I hear that for sure. I would also point out that cause of concern transcends social status or resource from individual people who are looking to earn an honest living and care for their families and are worried about this new powerful technology, what it's going to do to them, but all the way up to the largest corporations. They don't sleep too well at night, because once there's a lot of change happening and it's revolutionary, they might be the first ones to go. The critical thing is that people should remain adaptable, right? And it's important for, as humans, for us to enjoy our lives and be comfortable, but also to continue to be continuous learners.
Welcome to the Raising the STEAM podcast, hosted by M. Ross, where we're dedicated to raising the STEAM leaders of tomorrow. Discover inspiring stories, lessons learned, and actionable insights from the worlds of science, technology, engineering, art, mathematics, and medicine. Connect with us and a community of dedicated parents, educators, and STEAM supporters at raisingthesteam.com and at raisingthesteam on social media. Together, let's ignite curiosity and drive change.
Welcome to the Raising the STEAM podcast. I'm your host, M. Ross. Today, I am here with a healthcare AI expert, retina specialist, entrepreneur, and so much more, Dr. Stephen Odaibo. Stephen, how are you?
I'm well. Thank you, Ross. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here. As I mentioned, you have a really diverse background and set of expertise. Can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and your journey?
Most certainly. As you mentioned, you know, my name is Stephen Odaibo. I'm born in Nigeria, and I came to the U.S. when I was 17 for school. Went to the University of Alabama, Birmingham, studied math undergrad, and got a master's degree in math. I was 21 at the time, and then I moved on to Duke School of Medicine, which is where we met. And while I was there, I did med school and also worked in the lab of Dr. Bob Lefkowitz, who ended up winning the Nobel Prize in chemistry afterwards. And while I was there, I sort of had an inkling that, you know, the math really needed a computer to express itself in the world. If you're going to do something with math, you're going to sort of need a computer somewhere in that mix to impact people's lives, to make a positive difference. And so I found myself in computer science, got my master's there, and then went on to become a retina physician. Right now, I practice medicine one morning every week as a retina doctor. I see patients, I do procedures. And for the rest of it, I've been working primarily in the R&D space. I founded a company called Retina AI Health Incorporated, and we've built an autonomous AI system to help with diabetic retinopathy screening. So people who have diabetes need to get their eyes checked in a special way at least once a year. And there's not enough doctors, there's not enough, you know, there's resource costs, there's multiple problems such that most people are not getting it done. And so our system helps with that. And that's sort of in a nutshell, you know, the activities that I'm currently involved with.
That sounds amazing. I mean, such a diverse background and so many different things you've done. What was your biggest influence in your journey?
You know, all things considered, really then and through it and now, my biggest influence has been God. You know, faith. My faith is a key part of, you know, how I've progressed, and in that journey, many people have played pivotal and critical roles in keeping me, steering me towards the direction that that I should be going in. One privilege that I've had is not just the training that I got, but the work that I do. It's quite unique in a lot of ways, right? So such that, you know, I can't point and say, okay, this, I looked at this one person and I saw them doing these things and I decided that I'm going to do that, right? So that's really not been the story. The real compass and direction that I've had has been my faith journey. And one big influence in all of that, there are several people, if I was to talk about individual people that have played pivotal roles in helping me, you know, this interview, we don't have enough time. But, you know, I have to mention my brother, you know, David Odaibo, who passed away in 2021. And you know, he played a key role in pointing me towards AI. I had already gone through graduate school in computer science before he came, and he was doing his, he's older than I am, but he had worked a little bit, and then he went back and was doing a PhD in computer engineering. And he, you know, he kept telling me that this was in like 2011, you know, he kept telling me that there's this amazing thing called deep learning. You really need to look at it. And, you know, and for me, when I was in grad school, machine learning was one of the most boring things. You know, they had these little toy projects and it was all, you know, Markov this and that. And you were trying to, you know, Bellman's equations. And it was just all theoretical. And there was really no application that anybody could point you to that you would say there's a future in that, right? That that's actually something that's worth learning. It really wasn't there at the time. Because I got my master's in 2009 from Duke, right? And I was involved in scientific computing, you know, then, which has served, you know, as a good background for me. But yeah, my brother sort of persisted and said, you know, you really need to look at this thing. And I saw how excited he was about it. By that time, I had already gone back to medical school, graduated, gone to my residency. I went to, I did an intern year at Duke, residency at Howard, fellowship in retina at Michigan. And one day over dinner, I think Christmas break or something, you know, my brother asked me what it is that I do. And I said, you know, really, you know, in a nutshell, I walk into a room, I look at a picture of somebody's retina, and that picture tells me how I'm going to treat that patient, whether they're going to need an injection in their eyeball that day or not. Hmm. And he was like, you know, really, that's something that AI is going to be highly involved in. You really need to look at this. And so he convinced me. And after I took my board exams, I already had background in computer science. I was already a programmer in C, C++, et cetera, MATLAB. And so I learned, I took about a week out. I learned Python, programming language, and then I trained a neural network, one of the back then state of the art, which was like a VGG 16 layers. These days we have, you know, thousands of layer networks, and, you know, trained it, and I saw it correctly diagnose the patient and the disease, you know, and I, there was a stack, I can't remember exactly how many, but the accuracy was in the 90s. And wow. Yes, sir. My jaw literally dropped. You know, this was early days for AI. We're talking about 2012, 2013. And it was not in the news. It was not, there was not a hype or anything about it. People hadn't really heard about it. Not even, you know, people in the clinical space per se back then. And so I saw this thing and it dawned on me that this will have a massive impact in the world and in healthcare and in my particular field. So who better than I to be involved in this type of thing? And so at that point, I had to make a decision. And so I was out in private practice in Iowa, went ahead and founded a company, Retina AI Health Incorporated, because of the seriousness and the resources that are going to be required to move this type of technology into clinics. That was sort of the route, you know, to go. And the rest is history.
Very awesome. And you know, all for my condolences to you for your brother. But, you know, he's definitely left behind an amazing legacy through you and your family and his family as well. So
thank you so much. And I really appreciate you saying that. And so my brother was the founder, co-founder and CTO. And, you know, he was the main brains behind a company called Analytical AI that's based out of Birmingham, Alabama, at the time of his passing. And that, if you've ever flown out of a major airport in the U.S. or almost pretty much any airport in the U.S. in the last 2 years, you've gone through code that he wrote. So he wrote the code and got the contract from the TSA, which was, and they partnered with a company called Analogic that built the hardware system. So any airport, you name it, JFK, LAX, you know, IAH, Hobby, whatever, you know, even small regional airports. So he wrote that code and scans the bags and it identifies the threats that are in there. And so I had front row seats to that entire process. From watching him. And one of the things that I was able to gather from that is that, you know, everybody has a God-given right to be great and lean into that and pursue that despite what anybody else might think or want. And so I saw that, and that is something that, you know, has stuck with me in addition to a lot of the other inspirations that I've gotten. to know that you can do great things, and they can come from small and humble beginnings, like a laptop.
That's awesome and powerful advice. Thank you for that. So there's a lot of news and concern amongst people thinking that AI will replace their jobs. What do you say to people who might even feel hesitant to pursue a career in medicine, nursing, or another healthcare field because they fear AI will take over those jobs in the future?
Yeah. The first thing I'll say is that, you know, their concerns are valid. You know, their worries are valid, right? And that I hear that for sure. I would also point out that the cause of concern transcends social status or resource from individual people who are looking to earn an honest living and care for their families and are worried about this new powerful technology, what it's going to do to them. But all the way up to the largest corporations, they don't sleep too well at night, because once there's a lot of change happening and it's revolutionary, they might be the first ones to go. And there's a long list of, you know, large prominent companies. There's a long list in that graveyard, like from Xerox to Blockbuster to you name it, didn't survive technological revolutionary change. The critical thing is that people should remain adaptable, right? And it's important for, as humans, for us to enjoy our lives and be comfortable, but also to continue to be continuous learners, you know, in that process, and to look out for opportunities, because as these changes happen, they will be creating new opportunities, they will be creating new jobs, and to position ourselves to be able to take advantage of some of those things. For instance, a lot of nurses now are becoming skilled in data, in the structure of data, in electronic medical records, in how data is structured, curated, organized. And also our nurses, and understand how you care for a patient, you know, what the vital signs mean and how doctor's orders are curated, followed, and what's on the ground. And there's a huge need for people with those intersectionary skills.
Absolutely. And so since you did bring up data, can you talk about the importance of data in the development of healthcare AI technology with regard to its quality, where it's sourced, and things of that nature?
Data is key. Data is the fuel that drives AI. It powers AI. And so it becomes very important. And it's a resource-intensive process to have accurate data. One thing that, you know, we care a lot about is representation, right? Demographics. There are people, these intrinsic differences that exist across lines of race, of sex, of age. They are significant biological differences. And so in designing medical devices that are based on AI, as well as in designing clinical trials to validate those systems, these things have to be taken into account. And, you know, we as a company, this is part of our centralized in design principles, right? And we believe that we're leading in terms of the effort on the design end, as well as the validation end, regarding subgroups dynamics, and ensuring that the AI devices that are put out in the market, that primarily we build and put out there, work well on all subgroups and all people for whom they are indicated. That's very important.
So your path is both multidisciplinary and just unique in general. I imagine that your path to get to where you are today has been winding. What are some challenges that you faced along the way, and how did you overcome those?
Yeah, you know, thank you. Yes, there certainly have been a number of challenges along the way at various points. One thing that's fascinating is, you know, looking back, you know, all of those challenges, you know, have been assets. You know, I really can't really point out to one particular challenge that I would say that, you know, I wish that hadn't happened, you know, in the long term, you know. And the challenges are no, it doesn't make them any easier. But one thing that I've, you know, strived to do is come out better and use every challenge and every obstacle as a stepping stone and seek out what the opportunity is in this particular, you know, challenge. If it's a delay in something that one is looking for, then what do you use that time to do? Do you go deeper, you know, get stronger? And what particular, you know, capability enhancements can somebody, you know, use that to do? So that has helped me a lot. And then the other thing that has helped me is, you know, my faith has been a key part of this. And I, you know, I'm not shy to talk about it because, you know, at the end of the day, there's results, right? So in being able to stay focused on the path that I'm on, in the things that I am striving for, my faith has played a key role, you know, in all of that, and looking to God for guidance at every step of the way. And one of the big advantages of something like that is that you can be significantly ahead of the pack, right? Like back when I was at Duke, you know, as a medical student, and then, you know, going to computer science and all this kind of stuff, and, you know, and coming in with math, people are wondering, what is this guy up to? Like, what, you know, what are you even doing? You know, and that's, and we're talking about the administration or people who designed the curriculum at one of the best medical schools in the United States. But the year was 2002. And so there was, the word AI was not anywhere on the surface. Mm. And so at some point it's just like, well, we don't know what this guy is doing, and he's probably not doing the right thing. but it is the right thing, right? Mm-hmm. And now everybody would agree with that. Because now we're in 2024, and you can't open your browser and not see the word AI pop up in there. And AI is really just math. You know, it's math, it's computer science, it's all these things that I've been working on and bringing together. And so that's one advantage, is that you can kind of see into the future, number one. And number two, you can keep going when you're not getting external validation, which doesn't mean that it's not hard, you know, for to not be getting rewards along the way, like, you know, every step of the way. But there's always a price, you know. If somebody is like, if everybody's like, oh, you know, we love you and we're just going to promote you at every turn, that may not, it's going to feel good, you know, but all said and done, when you look back, that may not have been the best thing, because there's going to be moments where the world's not cheering you on and everything is just silent and it's just hard. And, you know, and then in those moments, what do you do? And then the other thing is, when you've been through those moments, one can actually have sort of a little bit of a level head when the applause does turn on, if it does, because it's not a bad thing at all, you know, for to be supported and to have that. So I've had a lot of support. I'm not saying that I haven't, but I've also certainly had challenges at every step of the way. You know, I've had challenges, you know, with what you would call sort of systematic infrastructure that ultimately, you know, it makes you stronger, it makes you better. And one thing my mom used to say to me when I was a kid is, he that is in you is greater than he that is in the world. And, you know, and I told her recently that, you know, that's something that has really helped me a lot, because just understanding your inherent greatness, right? Understanding your inherent privilege that is greater than the privilege that someone else might have and may look good. You may even say, I wish I had that. But the privilege that that is coming from a higher power is actually the greatest one. And so being able to lean into that and hold on to that has allowed me to reach a point. I just wrote a book on AI, for instance, but I'm a doctor. I practice medicine. I just wrote a book that's at the fundamentals of AI and state of the from all the way from like the chain rule, all the 20 chapters, all through large language models. And it details all of the math throughout the whole thing. It's called the Foundational Mathematics of Artificial Intelligence. You know, here it is, published this month, right? About 400 pages of book. And yesterday I was in clinic, you know, doing intravitreal injections and doing lasers on patients. And so one is not able to get to places like that if you are constantly right in the coattails of society's privilege. You're going to have moments where if you're going to come up with something new, if you're going to come up with something that people are going to say, where the heck did that come from? Or where the heck did this person come from? You're going to have, you're not always going to be in the spotlight.
Absolutely. Hey, thank you so much for tuning in to Raising the Steam. If you're enjoying this conversation, make sure to subscribe wherever you're watching or listening, whether it's YouTube, your favorite podcast platform, or our website. Your subscription helps us keep bringing you insightful conversations about careers in STEM and STEAM and how people can accelerate their journeys in these fields. Don't forget to leave a review or comment to let us know what you think. Now let's get back to our guests. So, I mean, at this point, you're a physician, you're a mathematician, you're a computer scientist, and a bunch more things, an entrepreneur. Are there any unexpected ways that having all of these knowledge bases simultaneously has helped you in your work or maybe just in life in general?
Yeah, absolutely. One thing is the big picture, being able to see the forest from the trees, but also being able to zoom in on the leaves, the individual leaves, right? In medicine, when I'm in the clinic, a patient walks in, that patient is the most important, you know, person in the whole world, and there's nothing else. You know, I'm looking at that one patient and zooming in on what their problem is, coming up with their particular solution. In computer science, we think at scale. How can we scale things? You know, how can we, you know, how can we make it such that we want to dictate something from order of n squared to order of n log n or linear scale? We're thinking about the whole world and how many patients, how many people are there, how many billions, and how do we compute this at scale? So being able to look at both of those things and utilize both of those skill sets have been critical. For me, I've while working on large problems such as population health and how do we make sure that everybody with diabetes is appropriately screened, right? Big problems. And then at the same time, being able to zoom in on, you know, on the algorithm, on the particular detail of, you know, how do you build something and how do you validate it and be that detail oriented while also being that big picture and being able to do both at the same time has required trainings from both places. The training that we get as doctors is looking at the one person, right? Interpreting the one lab result and seeing what it means. Whereas computer science is the opposite in a lot of ways. It's you're looking at numbers, you're looking at big things and matrices and how do you scale them? How do you compute things at scale? But both of those things are important, and it's important to be able to go back and forth between the two. And so that's something that I think both trainings have helped me with.
Interesting. So how about the role of creativity in arts? How does that influence innovation in your work or in technology and healthcare in general?
It's very important. Storytelling is a critical thing. And at the end of the day, I firmly do believe that, you know, to be at the very top of a person's field, you're ultimately going to become an artist. That's the final destination.
Interesting.
Yeah. You're going to be a very good storyteller. And when I say you, I'm talking about, you know, your audience, of course, and people that are coming through that look into what they should strive to be. One is ultimately going to develop an amazing skill for narrating things in simple terms. And also being able to visualize a concept and bring it to life. And that's like a painting. That's sort of that process, that exercise.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you pointed out you and I met when we were at Duke at the same time. You were in medical school. I was a graduate student in electrical engineering. And we have a mutual friend that introduced us. And for some reason, you made a really big impression on me. In that short interaction, I could tell that you're highly intelligent and you just had a really positive aura around you. It really did leave an impression on me. I'm guessing you've made a similar impression on others, and I suspect that at least a factor in people wanting to work with you is because of that sort of positive energy and that perception of just intelligence that you give off. How important have soft skills like communication and more intangible things been in your career, and how do you feel that they play in STEAM careers in general?
Yeah, it's a great question, and you know, they're very important. And the, you know, great things are typically done, you know, in groups, right? With teams, and teams, I mean that really in the larger sense, right? A team being, you know, a set of people that, you know, have a common shared goal, you know, and are moving towards that. And a key part of that is, you know, having a clear vision and being able to communicate it, right? Which ultimately comes down to influence. and, you know, being able to express one's ideas, you know, very clearly and have them heard. And those are soft skills, right? They're very important. One thing that we have emphasized, and I have, is that the technical skills are critical. They're vital. Right. That's part of why, you know, for instance, I've taken the time to write a book, 400-page book on the math of AI, the nuts and bolts of it, is because that's the actual code, the thing that actually works, is also enormously vital, and the science, you know, because in some respects, it's something of a leveler in some ways. And so it's very easy to overemphasize one thing versus the other. And I see that happen all the time. And I think that's the critical balance, is going between the hard technical skills and the soft skills, and putting just the right amount of emphasis at which on them, you know, at the specific time. I've seen a lot of companies where all the bandwidth resources, and you can tell all they're thinking, is now on the, you know, politics, influence, lobbying type marketing. That's all that they're worried about, and no thought or interest anymore in, say, R&D, and proof of principle and that type of thing. And I think that's, you know, really wrong, the wrong way to go about things. But also, you know, if somebody has a great technical product that works, you know, but you're not able to tell the story of why it works, why it's important, you know, why people should care about it, then that's also the wrong approach.
Definitely. So based on your experiences, what advice would you give to parents who want to support and nurture their children's interest in areas like yours?
I would say that, you know, inspire them with confidence, you know, early on, to know that they're capable, you know, of doing, you know, great things. And then I would say also that the time is a vital, you know, to be spent in building the, you know, the foundational skill sets in math, in the sciences. Those are important. Those are the two big things.
Okay. So, I mean, I mentioned that when I met you, and just speaking to you now, it's just apparent to me that, you know, you have a high intellect, and some of the things that you are born with just exude. But in general, how important do you think sort of those like natural talents are versus environment? So kind of the nature versus nurture. What do you think is more important, or how is that balanced in your mind in terms of the success someone might have in a STEAM career?
Yeah, both are very important. I think that, I think that both are sometimes overestimated. That's very, very common. One thing that's enormously common is the nature side being overestimated. I think that's the most common error that I've seen. A lot of people of color or from under-resourced backgrounds often would look at other people and think that maybe that person was born smarter.
Right.
That's a very common thing. You know, we've seen that a lot. Without knowing what's behind it, you know, and what opportunities, and sometimes the amount of work that is just in the culture that some people have been exposed to early on. And so that makes a difference. Like, you know, you might have two people going up for the SATs, right? And one person might have put in, you know, 100x, literally 100x the hours for preparation than somebody else has. They're not going to get the same score. But the person with the lower score would not know. They just think that person is so smart because they got that high. And so I've seen that, and I've had opportunities to sort of like be in different places where I've seen some of that. I've had privilege. My dad is a surgeon, a gastroenterological surgeon who worked as a professor. You know, he's, you know, definitely seen the discipline, you know, and the that he has, and the, you know, professionalism and the love and care, and seen a strong male figure growing up was something that definitely has been a big influence for me. And I, at the same time, I've just, you know, going through the process, I've had opportunity to just see how much like hard work itself, which is the nurture side of it.
Right.
Or I guess, which is sort of the nurture side of it versus sort of like an innate.
Exactly.
So both are very important and both should be encouraged. But I would say that by far the bigger error or misperception is that some people are sort of born smarter, and that's way, 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 way overrated.
No, I 100% agree. Actually, I was just telling my 10-year-old recently, it's like, in my life, in my experience, I've seen people who've been extremely successful in their respective fields, and those people come in all different types. So you might people who might be those people who just come across as highly intelligent and have that natural gift. Some of them are not those people that you might not think are that. There's some people come from, you know, privileged financially, socially speaking backgrounds. Some of them come from not so privileged backgrounds socially and economically. But the one thing that they all have in common is that they persevered and they did not give up.
Thank you. Thank you. That's the key word, perseverance. And that's the distinguishing factor, right? That's the thing that sets people apart. Are you going to quit or are you not going to quit? And if you're not going to quit, guess what? The obstacle is going to have to quit because something's got to give.
Absolutely. That's right. I think we're 100% in agreement on that one. So, I mean, you pointed out your book. So is that a resource you think that somebody who might be interested in a field like yours should explore in order to kind of get an understanding, a fundamental understanding of those type of topics?
Absolutely. Because, you know, it covers all the essential algorithms in AI, you know, everything from GANs, you know, like to LLMs, to the basic things as well, like the Fourier transform and so on. I would mention that there's a prerequisite for the book are calculus and linear algebra. So it's a technical book. It's a math textbook.
Right.
Depending on the level, a lot of high school students are already taking linear and calculus. But I think most people probably take it in college. And so, yeah, once somebody has that background, you know, this is a great single book that can give you all the info to have a fundamental understanding of what AI is and how it works.
And where can people find it to purchase?
On Amazon. It's on Amazon? Yeah.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah. The Foundational Mathematics of Artificial Intelligence. Here it is.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So, Stephen, given everything we talked about and everything in your life, if you could go back in time and give advice to your younger self, what would that advice be?
Great question. Manus, I would it's easy for me to say a lot of things that I've said now in hindsight, right? Because hindsight's 2020. But in the moment of going through a lot of these things, it's not always very clear. But I'll probably just reiterate to myself that understand purpose, my purpose, what it is, right? Mm-hmm. And I would encourage myself to understand that there are going to be ups and downs, and that I should, while respecting people, while honoring people, while loving people and the outside world, to ensure that I'm appropriately decoupled from that, in the sense of not rising and falling on people's opinions. Right? I've been lucky or fortunate or blessed to have stuck with whatever it is that I've got to do through ups and downs, right? But it's not like it was easy. I wish it was sort of easier in a way to know that, just to sort of be clear on that from the very beginning, that when people say you're great and you're awesome, it's nice, enjoy it. But just to make sure that also has its place, that it's not the be all and end all. And that also, that would help a lot with, you know, when even people you love and respect might not necessarily have a good understanding of what you're doing or why you're doing it. And certainly people that you don't know. So I've been great. I've been fortunate, rather blessed, to have, you know, supportive spouse, parents that, you know, gave me a lot of what I need, you know, early on, and, you know, for a good community of friends. But, you know, some of these things are nice things to have. But one thing that you mentioned, Manus, is perseverance. And that perseverance is the single distinguishing factor. It's not intellect. It's not your academic degrees. It's not. You can always find people that you can say, how the heck did this person get to where they are, and what and how are they able to stay there and be doing this thing over and over? And one thing that you'll find is that perseverance and just that persistence. And it helps a lot to know, this is what I was created to do. This is what I will do. And I will not be stopped, because this is something that is good and necessary.
Awesome. Stephen, this has been an amazing conversation. I mean, you know, people didn't see behind the scenes, though, but this recording is, it sort of took us about 5 times longer than we expected. And, you know, ending on perseverance, that's, you know, we did today. We persevered and we're here. We got it done. And it was awesome. So I thank you again so much. Since I first met you in that interaction so many years ago, I knew you were a special human being. And I feel really privileged to have you here today and sharing your story and having a lot of great advice for the audience and myself. So thank you again.
Thank you so much, man. It's an honor and a privilege to be on the show, Raising the Steam. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to Raising the Steam for more useful content. Leave a review or comment to help us grow and continue bringing you valuable interviews, resources, and events. I'm your host, Em Ross. See you next time.